Thank you for joining us this evening for another Ask the Experts tele-event. This is Carol Kepler, your host, bringing you special people from all over the planet, each with a unique background of experience to share. And you, our listeners, get to ask the questions. Ask the Experts is sponsored by Energy Medicine Foundation, where energy medicine, water, and intuition meet with the future. We have an exciting show for you tonight. So put your phone on speaker, lean back, and enjoy our expert, Lynn McTaggart, online from London, England. Lynn McTaggart, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Carol. It's fun to be here again.
No one could deny that you are indeed an expert in the field of intention experiments. Has anyone ever done what you have done on such a grand scale?
No, I don't think so.
How in the world did you ever come up with such a wild idea?
Well, it came out of the fact that I was frustrated. I was very interested in the idea that group minds can have an even bigger effect than thoughts generated singly. So I was looking through all the evidence for, you know, group mind and, you know, what kind of studies there were, looking at lots of people thinking the same thought at the same time and seeing if it could affect a target. And there really wasn't much. There was some tantalizing evidence, but it wasn't conclusive. So it was my husband who was talking to me one night, and he said, well, why did you do these experiments yourself? And that seemed a ridiculous idea because I'm not a scientist. But I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, there's this thing called the Internet now where you can bring people together from all over the world, and I have lots and lots of readers, something that most scientists don't have.
Right.
So if I worked with scientists and they put a target in their lab, and I asked all my readers to come on the Internet and look at that target via my website, we'd have the biggest global experiment in history. And that's what we're doing, and it is the biggest mind-over-matter experiment in history.
May I ask you, how long did it take to put all that together?
It's a work in progress, Carol. It was a work in progress because it was, you know, a while. I had some great luck in some scientists who stepped forward who loved the idea. I have to honor Dr. Gary Schwartz, the psychologist at University of Arizona, for very generously putting his lab at our disposal and running these experiments with me for a year. But one of the things we didn't count on was the Internet power we were going to need for this. Our web people really underestimated this. And so the first time we ran one, we were victims of our success. We had 10,000 people trying to get on at the same time, and the website crashed. So what we really learned about more than anything is server capacity and Internet power, because the ability of lots of people to look at the same page at the same time is entirely dependent on server power. And for that, we have tried lots of different methods before coming up with our current way, which is using a social network with 500 linked servers in order to run our experiments.
That's
so we're
great.
Using their servers, not having to rent our own. So that was a clever, ingenious idea that that our third set of web experts came up with. But it's been a real challenge to try to fit the technology and to work out some ingenious solutions with the technology for this unique problem.
So you have some really good tech guys there.
Well, we have clever people, and now we have a lot of people in the all around the world who are emailing me all the time. I've put out my intention for this said, okay, guys, how do we do this on my website? And I have all sorts of wonderful people coming back and saying, hey, let's try this, let's try that. So it's now becoming a real global problem and with a global solution.
And we have questions here today from listeners who left them when they registered online for this event. And I know we can't get through all of these in this hour, but let's give it a try.
Okay.
First, some hard questions. And you seem to be very good at these because you are so connected with the scientists, as you said, from the very beginning. And so here's the first one from Pennsylvania, here in the U.S. How is your idea that consciousness affects matter different from classical physics?
Okay, well, classical physics, basically, and it's now called fundamental physics, which is the physics of Isaac Newton, mm-hmm. believes that there is such a thing as an objective world out there, and it's full of set things, which are finalized assemblages. They're completely set as they are, and they operate according to very well-behaved and set laws in time and space. And that's the clockwork world that we have been introduced to. That's the reality we've been told is the truth. But quantum physics now has understood that actually when you get right down to the subatomic level, things aren't a set anything. They're a potential of something. And there seems to be a necessity for a co-creation with consciousness, that consciousness is somehow an energy with the ability to affect and complete matter. So it turns it in from that potential of something to something real. So it is inextricably tied with the creation of our reality. And that's the fundamental difference.
That is really beautiful, isn't it?
Mm.
That opens us up to potentially being able to do or be anything.
Well, we understand now that we are, you know, we are our reality, that we are tied with our reality. It's not a something else out there. It's not a not me out there. It's a me. It's all part of us.
And this probably ties in with what you have just said from Sun City West. Is efficacious prayer quantum physics in action?
Yes. Now, in my book, The Intention Experiment, I've made a distinction between prayer and intention, a teeny distinction. I've said that usually with intention, it originates with somebody, but they hand over responsibility to another entity. They say things like, thy will be done.
Yeah.
And they sort of say, well, I'm not going to send the intention. I'm going to let God decide.
Right.
With intention, it's kind of a very directed thought, a very specific and directed thought with the idea of changing, affecting and changing a target. And the person takes responsibility for it. However, he understands that it might be originating with him, it is not affected through him. That you move aside and you understand that your ego is not involved in actually creating this, that you are somehow hooking up to the larger picture, and you are, you know, the field, if you will, is doing the intention.
Would the field be sourced? Would it be our creator?
Well, I think, you know, we can call many things, but I think that this whole field of all possibility, the zero point field, in my view, is what many people have called the all, the divine matrix,
yes.
The, you know, universal field, the, you know, the all-in-one, all of those ideas for God, in a sense, mm-hmm. are you know, encapsulated in the zero-point field, I think.
And so that's the hookup.
So that's the hookup, exactly.
Very good. We have a question here from Ben Lomond, California. What is the most important thing after setting an intention?
Focused mind, I think, more than anything else. Getting into, in my book, I put together a distilled program for how to do intention based on many interviews with so-called intention masters. I took all of the main techniques that they use and extrapolated them into a single simple program. And, you know, many people like Qigong masters, Buddhist monks, and master healers all have different individual kinds of variations, but basically they're using very similar techniques. So that's what I distilled into my Powering Up program. And I feel that the most important thing is this highly focused mind. Now, when intention masters send intention, they may start with a meditative state, but they move into a state of a very active focus. And it's not a situation where their brain is calming down like it would be if they were undergoing light dreaming. It's a real powered up state. They're entering a kind of hyperspace where they are attending with every bone of their bodies. And so that's why I feel that it is, you know, it is a powered up state. So this is very important. But there are many, many other things that are also important. Choosing the right place, timing is important, emotional state is important, forming a connection, many, many other things like that.
What is the place, the special place that you're talking about?
It is using whatever space it is, using it over and over when you're sending intention. And the reason I suggest that is that there are a lot of studies, including by physicist William Tiller, demonstrating that when you use the same intention space, first of all, the studies begin to work faster and better. So it's almost like an inventor who invents something in his garage, and it works really well in his garage, but it doesn't work when he tries to bring it to IBM to sell it to them, because he's used that conditioned space to do his intention. There are other things that also indicate that a special space is important. All the work of William Tiller would suggest that the space becomes conditioned. It becomes like a sacred space. The reality, certain physical properties of it change. So that's another reason why it's important.
That's really good. And you mentioned timing. What's important about that?
Well, this is a long answer, Carol. There's a lot of evidence that human beings and all living things are very much affected by solar activity, solar flares, coronal mass ejections, and that this has a huge effect on our geomagnetic shield, which in turn has an enormous effect on the two major engines of the human body, the heart and the brain. With besides the physical effects, heart attacks increase, mm-hmm. psychiatric admissions increase, mm-hmm. Epileptic fits increase when there's a lot of solar activity. There is also an effect on our psychic ability, our ability to access the field. When the Earth is quiet, it seems that we are better at ESP. We gain more information psychically. When the Earth's geomagnetic shield is got a lot of activity, when it's unsettled and there's a lot of geomagnetic activity, it seems that our intention increases, according to some lab studies, our ability to affect mind over matter. So I suggest, based on that evidence, that it's probably a good idea to wait until it's a little geomagnetically unsettled to send intention.
Which is now,
and even more so, it's going to peak in 2012 for an unprecedented amount of geomagnetic activity, which may be the reason why people are talking about a flowering of consciousness and unfolding of people's manifestation, et cetera, because we're going to become master intenders at that time.
That's beautiful. Master intenders. And you said emotions? How important is that?
It's sending it out through your heart. Very simple idea. Send it out through your heart. There certainly are many studies showing that the heart is one of the major antennas of the body and sometimes receives material even before the brain. And so that's an important point, is to send out intention via your heart. Send it out through your heart.
And I saw here that there were a couple of people who sent in questions that were concerned about negative intentions. Let's take a look at those here.
I think that's everybody's favorite question.
Is it?
Is there such a thing? Is it more powerful than positive intention? And what do I do to protect myself from it?
Kind of like voodoo?
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of lore about the whole idea of voodoo, pointing the bone. Mm-hmm. And certainly many anecdotal, much anecdotal evidence that native tribes, when they point the bone, the person dies. They hex somebody to death. Mm-hmm. In terms of the science, I was very interested to find, because people say to me all the time, positive intention is much more powerful than negative intention. And I wish it were so, but it's not. Negative intention is just as powerful as positive intention.
Not more powerful.
If not more powerful sometimes, if done by a master of intention. Mm-hmm. There are many, many studies of Qigong masters who show that when they are sending out a negative intention, they have they can have a very big effect. And they can also target their intention and turn some of it positive and some of it negative and have an effect. people use negative intention all the time when they want to get bigger, better. They will try to kill a microbe, for instance, if they've got an infection. Or if they've got cancer, they try to kill the cancer through visualization. Mm-hmm. You know, they kill the cancer so the host will live.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we use negative intention a lot of the time.
Without thinking.
Without thinking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think anytime someone, to be honest, my definition of intention is not so much just a focused physical, focused mental efforting to change a goal, but also just your unconscious stuff that's going on all the time. You know, just the unconscious things going through your mind is just running through your brain. That's becoming your life's intention. So I think that there are two things that are really important here. One is, if you master the techniques of intention, they can be used for positive or negative effect. People are beaming out information all the time. And we know that from the science now. We are sending and receiving information at every moment. And so you have to start thinking about what you're sending, because, you know, your thoughts aren't locked inside you. They are things that radiate out and affect everything around you. So if you are negatively intending or judging or having the usual stuff, the usual flotsam and jetsam that runs through the average human mind, you're beaming out that information all the time, and that's becoming your intention.
You don't have to say the words.
No, you don't have to say the words. You just have to think it, and you're affecting. I mean, I do experiments all the time to having people send intention back and forth to each other. And the other person picks it up a huge percent of the time. They're picking it up on another level.
That certainly gives us a feeling for what's happening in the world today, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, in terms of protecting yourself, I mean, there's been some evidence that, you know, you can create a psychic bubble around yourself or a mental shield in some way. You know, imagine that you're surrounded in concrete or something. But I have to ask the question, is this the way people want to walk around, being separated from each other in such a drastic way? So I was looking around. I have two answers to this. One is, just last weekend, I got really hit with some negative intention. I was giving a seminar, and somebody really, really agitatedly came up and was having a go at me about stuff that I had said and didn't feel that she liked it at all. And she was shrieking at me and ended it by saying, "You're a joke." And so I was feeling a little vulnerable that day because it was Mother's Day and I wasn't home with my kids. And so we didn't know it was Mother's Day when I signed up for this, so it was moved. So I was really disturbed to find it. I never, ever am away from home with those kinds of things. So I was feeling a bit unhappy, so I had to ask her to leave. It was really an emotional situation. And so I started tearing up. And one by one, the audience started coming up out of their seats and surrounding me in this giant group hug to the point where it was about 5 feet deep. You know, it's 5 people deep. This giant, giant sort of, I like to call it a tunnel of love.
Beautiful.
And I was just energized by this. It just suddenly, just absolutely, just changed my state in that second, just split second, and I just was laughing and joking, and just the moment before was gone. So I have that as one thing. If you have a negative experience, just get your loved ones or even the people around you to just give you this giant, encircle you in a little group hug.
And
that's one very simple thing.
And
sorry?
Even if they aren't there, if you had called upon someone or
yes,
a friend, it could have been done long distance, couldn't it?
Absolutely. Distance is no problem.
I love
now,
it.
A second, you know, a second idea is kind of a nice idea from John Diamond, Dr. John Diamond, who has done a lot of work on behavioral kinesiology, as mm-hmm. first discovered by George Goodhart. Diamond's contribution is to really look at the emotional implications of toxic thoughts on the body and to show that when, you know, kinesiology is muscle testing, Diamond has demonstrated that when you have a toxic thought, your muscles go weak, just as it does when you're exposed to a noxious substance, mm-hmm. which is what you're usually testing with muscle mm-hmm. testing. Mm-hmm. And he's demonstrated that there is one antidote to negative thinking or people sending you a thought, because, you know, he shows with muscle testing that all you have to do is think or be told you're ugly or your mother didn't love you or you've got a flat tire, anything like that, and your muscles go weak. So he came up with this thing called a homing thought, which is what he calls cantillation, or your divine purpose in life, the thing that you were put on this earth to do. And I think this is such a beautiful thought, and he should be so honored for this, because he's figured out that when somebody is holding on to their homing thought, their arm stays strong. And I think this is a very powerful message he has, is the idea of you holding on to what you were put on this earth to do.
That sounds like a great idea, and it would be a whole lot of help to the people who are feeling this negativity that we were just talking about. Let me look at the second question here on that negativity. Did we cover that one? So many questions here. I don't see the second one. So I think that you pretty well covered anybody's thoughts about being negative. I think that what you have said would be very helpful. I think the second one was about how they could protect themselves against negative intention, which, of course, mm-hmm. you did just discuss. Let me just go back for a moment to the geomagnetic factor that you talked about, that it the solar flares that we're experiencing right now that are affecting the heart and the brain. Mm-hmm. I know what happened when that lady went off on you. It is actually these electric, which these solar flares are shredding the brain's energy shield, which is to the brain what the aura is to the body. And so she was coming through out of not herself, but for instance, interfering spirits, entities that were really not herself. And so she, in a normal state, would not have acted like that. But a lot of people are experiencing that right now, and it's really hard. Some people can keep it under wrap, and others can't. And so you just had a very sad experience, but it turned into a lemonade type of deal.
It was a lemonade. Boy, was it a lemonade. It was just quite profound. Really, really profound.
That's so exciting when something like that happens.
Absolutely.
So, we have a question from North Augusta, South Carolina here, and someone would like to know, how do our intentions affect the animals that reside in a household?
Well, I think that they affect them. I think they affect, animals are exquisitely sensitive. I mean, I've done a lot of study on animals and animal energies for my Living the Field course, because I was very interested in animals. Animals live in the field. I mean, animals navigate via information that they get, instantaneous information, and it's not just magnetic. They navigate according to all sorts of extrasensory information. You know, if a wolf is separated from the pack by hundreds of miles, he somehow finds the pack. Now, that's like a giant rubber band, as Rupert Sheldrake always writes, that connects him to his pack, that you can't say is just magnetic or knowing the terrain. This is much more profound than that. So I think animals are so tuned in. And I tell you that and you've got to watch your thoughts with them and intentions too. And I have a very funny story about that. We have a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel named Ollie, and Ollie's a very adorable tricolored doggy, and he's also very willful. We live very near a great big common, which is a giant, almost like a forest in South London, and as South London has some of these great, great big commons. And we were walking Ollie one day. He got lost, but he made his own way home, which was quite amazing in itself, being the tiny dog he is. But, you know, dogs can do this. Anyway, I was walking another day with him on the common, and I met a woman who is one of my neighbors, and she's, you know, known and kind of lovingly referred to as the mayor of the neighborhood, because she's, you know, she pretty much tries to work out what's best for everybody. And she introduced me by way of saying, this is Lynn and her dog, who's so unteachable. He, you know, they went through all of this training, and he got lost, and he ran away, and he did this, et cetera, et cetera. And he's just, you know, hopeless. And so I didn't say anything. I was just being smiling and not saying anything. But Ollie went up to her and cocked his leg and weed all over her Wellington boot. And then he very, very, very deliberately walked around to her other boot and did the exact same thing. Now,
I think
Carol,
that is a wild story, Lynn McGuire.
So I wondered to myself, what is going on here? Because this dog has just read my thoughts. And he's never, ever done that before or since.
I have a willful cat, so I'm going to think about that a while. There has to be some connection there.
There has to be. So, moral of story, watch what you think. Actually, there's been only one other human being he's done this to, which is her husband. One other time, unrelated, and it was so, again, remarkable.
Did she say that?
No. He came to our house not long after. Ollie did the same to the husband, and I was just staggered by that. So the dog is somehow picking up something.
I like that. I have.
I just.
Do you have that in your book?
I don't have it in my book. I have it in my course, Living the Field.
Okay.
But I tell people about, you know, this psychic ability that animals have. So your original question. Much more than we. We have it. We've lost it. Dogs know they have it and they use it. Of course, all the wonderful work that Rupert Sheldrake has done on dogs that know their owners are coming home. My dog knows we're coming home and he ignores it, but everybody else, their dog is usually waiting at the front door and is, you know, before you even leave the office, as Sheldrake has shown. So this is demonstrating real extrasensory ability. So your intentions are affecting your animals and living things. And as Cleve Baxter was demonstrating, and I write about in the intention experiment, even your plants are picking up your information. Even they are picking up consciousness on some level.
Now, I have to give you a story. I was a kindergarten teacher for a lot of years, and I took two dishes of carrots, carrot tops that had been cut off the carrots, nothing green on them, and I put a happy face near one, remembering that five-year-olds don't read, and a sad face on the other, and on the two dishes, we added water to the dishes so that the carrots would grow, and I told the children, this is a lot of years ago, I told the children that the one dish they were to say happy things to. And they did. They used to stand in front of the table. I'd see them and say, I love you, you're pretty, you're growing. And then I said, in the other dish with the sad face, you can say mean things to them. So what I was trying to do is teach them about the power that they had. And they said, I hate you, you're ugly, you're growing, you're getting rotten. And the dishes, I wish I had photographs of that. The one dish grew green, the top, the other one absolutely rotted. It got black and rotted. And they're just, and anybody can do that one. That's a fun one. And so I wrote a letter every month to the parents and told them what we were learning in school. And I said, and it doesn't matter if you say it or if you just think it about your children, because it still will work. So these are all fun things to do, to experiment with, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And to think about.
And they demonstrate the power that we all have in the fact that we're sending at every moment and we're receiving at every moment. And we have to start really thinking about what we're thinking about.
And when they're thinking recession, which is, you know, all over the place here, that's group consciousness. This is not good.
No, it's bringing it about. Absolutely. So it's important for us to start thinking that they are not the thoughts of an individual brain locked in the skull, that this is an instruction to the universe with every thought you have.
That's scary.
It is very scary. It has a lot of responsibility. But it just means going back and becoming conscious and conscious living at every moment.
So we have someone in California that asked, said you interviewed many masters of intention, and you did mention that. Do they have any tips for regular people like us so that we can learn them and use them every day?
Yes. Besides some of the tips that I talked about, I think a really important one is that has a meaning and some resonance with the idea of your thoughts are affecting things at every moment, is the idea of working on mindfulness meditation, which is clearing your mind of all thoughts and simply observing and being present in the moment with five senses and without judgment. So let's say you're eating your cornflakes. Instead of thinking about what happened and thinking about what's going to happen in the day, you actually just concentrate and focus on the cornflakes. And I mean just focus on the cornflakes with all your five senses. So you hear what it sounds like to crunch it. You see what it looks like in the box and then on your plate. And you feel the kinesthetic feeling of it going down your throat. And you smell what it smells like. And all of those things, you use all of your senses to just feel and experience that moment. And you take maybe 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there in a day just to zoom into a mindfulness state of mind.
Hold that thought just a moment. I
yes.
would bet that this mindful eating would have a lot to do with weight and with getting the proper nutrition in the body, and that the body should handle it in the way it's supposed to, not just add weight to the body. Might that work?
I think that's a really interesting thought, Carol, is the whole idea that being mindful of your food and what it's doing for you
mm-hmm.
is going to be something besides just becoming full, which is what we do. We eat to get full.
I think that I might do a little piece on that one. Thank you.
That sounds fabulous. Really good idea.
Okay, I hope I didn't interrupt you too badly.
Not at all. It was just only the suggestion was to say, take this into a few minutes here and a few minutes there in your life and allow yourself to take intention and use it in throughout the day, even if you're waiting in line or somebody's talking to you, instead of thinking about how you're going to respond.
That's right.
Just pay attention to that person and everything about them with all of your senses. And the reason I'm suggesting all of this is that it will help you get into that hyper-aware, hyper-focused state when you go into meditation and then move into the next stage, which is this state of utter awareness of everything going on, and then you take all of that intention and you focus on you take all of that attention and you focus on your intention. And really be very specific. That's the other thing that intention masters talk about, is being very specific. You know, if you want to lose weight, don't just say, I want to lose weight. Say 5 pounds and how long you want to lose it by.
Set a goal.
Set a very specific goal. I said to myself, bathing suit weather was coming up. I wanted to lose 5 pounds last spring. And I said to myself, I'd like to lose 5 pounds. That was just my mental thought. And before I knew it, like within the next couple of days, I got a terrible stomach flu for a couple of days, a couple of weeks.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I forgot. I lost my 7 pounds, all right. But what I forgot to do, and it was very unpleasant, what I forgot to do was to specify how I was supposed to lose it. So, you know, you have to be careful and be really specific.
Don't they say that? Be careful of what you think you may get it?
Exactly. And that was it. Wham! Before I knew it. So just be careful of what you're wishing for, you know. Be careful what you pray for, as Larry Dossey said.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think that it has already been written, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Be careful what you pray for.
So what are you proposing for your next experiment? Actually, that one came from Phoenix, Arizona. And there are two parts of that. What do you foresee as the ultimate result of the experiment for the near-term future as far as our everyday human lives are concerned?
Let me tell you about the three experiments that are in process right now.
Three?
The first, 3 in process, and they're really exciting. The first one is we're working on our mini Gaia experiment, which is Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona in Tucson and his team are creating and working on creating like a little mini world. This is like a little terrarium. Mm-hmm. And we're going to put a temperature gauge in and some other readings in there and try to change the carbon dioxide levels in the terrarium, which will be very exciting. Because, of course, if we can do that, and we invite everybody to get involved, we will have enormous implication on the ability of intention to change and affect global warming.
Okay.
And also, you know, pollution, air pollution. So that's going to have a big implication. All of the intention experiments this year are taking the knowledge we had from last year when we did simpler experiments and moving into a more sophisticated kind of experiment. The next experiments we're working on are with Rustam Roy, Dr. Rustam Roy of Pennsylvania State University and Arizona State University. He's one of America's leading experts on materials science, particularly water. He's a big worldwide expert on water. Very, very well known, very well respected.
And he works with our foundation too, and as does Tiller. So you're mentioning some really special people to us.
Good buddies.
Very good. Good people.
Well, he is just great because he's designing an experiment where we're going to send intention to affect. We're going to see if we can mutate bacteria in polluted water. Now, bacteria mutate really easily, and you can turn bad bacteria into good bacteria very easily with a simple mutation. There have been some studies showing that intention has affected the mutation of bacteria and can affect it very, you know, easily and very well. So we're going to be trying to turn bad bacteria into good bacteria.
That's beautiful.
Or at least harmless bacteria. Mm-hmm. And so, in a sense, clean up water, clean up polluted water.
Ocean.
So if we could do that, amazing implications again.
That's a huge one.
That's a huge one.
Okay, and so that's 2. Oh, is the mini Gaia one of the 3?
That mini Gaia is 1 of the 3, then the water, and now the big experiment. I wanted to do a violence study, or I should say a peace study, for a very long time, which is, this is something that the Transcendental Meditation groups have studied. They have said that when there's a certain percentage of the population meditating, the crime rate goes down. And they have run this kind of study and examination in about 48 cities and found that this is the case. However, it's not been an intention. It's just been a passive thing of people meditating. So I've wanted to see what happens if we actually send an intention to a particular place that is a hot spot with a lot of violence. Will we lower the crime rate? So we're in the process of looking at and designing an intention experiment that will send intention to hot spots around the globe and see if we can lower violence with our thoughts. Now, I want this to be a massive thing, and it's kind of turning into the Live Aid of peace intention experiments, because I've been speaking with the Alliance for New Humanity, the group that's run by Deepak Chopra.
Okay.
And he loved that. I was on a radio show with him, and he really liked this idea and suggested that I contact his group. Mm-hmm. So I did. They really want to run it. And then I was speaking with the Association for Global New Thought, which is the head of all the New Thought churches. And they love the idea of getting all of their members to be involved in this. And in fact, they suggested that we run them the week after 9/11 this year. And that, of course, would be perfect if we're ready for this because, you know, it'll be a wonderful antidote to 9/11 and its memory,
right.
A peace experiment. And then we're talking to some other groups, too, the Oneness Foundation, which is massive, the Diksha Group, and they are also getting involved. So it's going to be this giant, giant intention experiment, and we will choose a different spot where there's violence. A lot of violence, and we'll send an intention to lower it in that area, and then start calculating the results.
Are you thinking of countries, or are you thinking of cities?
Cities, but places, cities in a particular, it will have to be a city, because we have to look at you know, very specific parameters.
And
remember, this
rate.
Is going to be a scientific experiment,
right.
Not just a bunch of people meditating.
Right.
We're
going
to need to know exactly how many people participate, exactly where we're sending it to, measure violence levels before, and measure violence levels during and after. So we'll need to make a very specific experiment. So we need specific places. But I thought we would not just pick American spots. We'll pick some of the areas with a lot of violence in America, but also pick a lot of areas of violence around the world.
And if it is in a city, there would already be these reports.
Mm-hmm.
And they would know how to do
yes.
it. So that would make it a very scientific.
Oh, yeah. There are parameters. You know, we'd be working with experts who know how to control for certain things because,
right.
you know, sometimes there are things that make the crime rate artificially rise, like mm-hmm. a football game or the full moon or something like that
yes.
where crime rates just go up or the end of term or some, you know, kind of crazy thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you would control for all of that and you would have all of the violence statistics that just, you know, statistics of crime and deaths and all sorts of things. And then you would look at it after we'd sent the intention to see if there's any difference. And again, controlling. Because oddly enough, it's almost like a weird morphic field, violence levels stay kind of steady. When you take out those confounding factors, those special times, the crime rate stays kind of steady. So we'll be able to see if we have an effect.
Let's see if we can get a couple of questions in here at the end. We have, about 10 minutes, 12 minutes to go. Here is one about your upcoming intention experiment. And why is it important for anyone to read the book first? You're having everyone read the book, The Intention Experiment, before they
okay.
can be a part of this.
It is open. We are now opening it up to anybody. But they get instructions from us because we decided to make it more open to everyone. On the other hand, I really recommend people read the book because, as I say, this is a scientific experiment. It's not about everybody just sending out good thoughts. I want people to engage in a certain process of sending intention. And I know this works from talking to a lot of intention masters. I want to turn the audience and the participants into intention masters. So I want them to get a chance to digest all of the material demonstrating that this is not just fantasy, that there's a lot of science behind this, and also to practice and to take this blueprint for doing intention and to practice with it. And so that's why I suggest people reading the book, so that everybody will be using intention in the same way.
And there is a lot of information in the book as to how to information and the practice is important, you're saying.
The practice is important, and we know it works. I mean, I have a wonderful story of a guy I just met last week in Dallas who said, I'm part of your community, and I was in a gas explosion. I burnt my hands really badly. So our website has communities, almost like a little sub-social network, so people can create their own little communities within it and be just emailing to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So when this happened, his wife wrote to his little community and said, please, you've got to send intention for Daniel. So they all powered up and they all started sending intention to him twice a week. And he turned into a medical miracle. He left the hospital. He was supposed to get skin grafts on his hands, but he left the hospital in 5 days. And his doctors want to study him now. They cannot figure out how he's healed so fast. Whereas his coworker got very similar burns. He was in intensive care for 2 weeks more, and he ended up getting the skin grafts.
What a great experiment that was.
It was, in a sense, our own little intention experiment unofficially. But Daniel basically used he's a living example that this stuff works. So this is the other reason we want people to, you know, all be using the same kind of intention at the same time. And I also want to let you know that for people listening to this, for the first listeners, It's going to be on March 29th, our next intention experiment. So we need people to write that down, March 29th.
Good.
And then we'll be running them just about every quarter throughout the year.
And so what you're doing is so exciting. When will we know about the results from this experiment? That was a question from Oklahoma.
Okay. Well, I just ran another seed experiment last weekend in Austin, and we'll know about that results in a couple of weeks. We sent intentions to the seeds at University of Arizona to make them grow faster than normal. And we have three sets of controls. We've run this before. Each time we've had a result. That doesn't necessarily mean we'll have a result this time, but it's pretty likely we will. It's demonstrated that every time we send intention in these kind of experiments, the seeds grow much faster. They sprout earlier and they grow faster than the control seeds. So we'll know that in another week or two. With the intention experiment on March 29th, we're trying to get the Gaia, the little mini Gaia, the little ecosphere, prepared in time. And if we do, we'll have a result right away, because there'll be monitors that can tell us right away and we'll be able to publish it. So as soon as I hear from the scientists, you hear. I also wanted to let everybody know that the timings for this are 5 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, on March 29th, that will be 1 p.m. East Coast Daylight Savings Time, because you will be in Daylight Savings Time. We won't yet over here in the U.K. So just
1 p.m.
for everybody,
okay,
1 p.m. East Coast Time, 1 p.m., 10 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time, and, you know, and 11 p.m., I think that would be Mountain Time, 12 p.m. Central Time. So people should just, 12 noon it is, people should just write that down, but they can also check out our website, which is www.theintentionexperiment.com for more information. And it's very important for them to sign up if they're going to participate, because then we send them all the instructions.
That's good. Let me just ask you one other thing about the book. I don't have it yet. Is it easy reading? Is it scientific? Is it, I guess, easy reading or scientific? It's both ends of the continuum.
I mean, you know, she would say it. So of course I'm going to say it's easy reading. But I guess, Carol, the best answer to that is, I'm a writer first, and I've been a writer for, you know, 30 years. And I am first and foremost a storyteller. So I tried to, in the field and with the intention experiment, sneak in the science. So the story is really stories of discovery and the scientists and people who use intention. And it's got the science just kind of snuck in there. So people tell me it's easy to read.
You did that in the field.
And I did it again.
You did it again. And I told you I had that book on my shelf for a year before I dared open it up. And I was really surprised at what a good story it was. You are a good storyteller.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Well, it's, I guess I benefit from the fact that I'm not a scientist. So I have to get these guys who think in math and code to explain it to me. And I have to study a lot of things about the science. Now, I can read science, but I don't talk in that way, and I don't think in that way. So I have to translate it in some sort of metaphoric way for me. So a lot of times I'm talking in analogies and metaphors. I'm saying that, well, this state in quantum physics is a little bit like crunched up cotton balls or something like that, so that I can understand it, and then people understand it. So I'm usually always, you know, operating from the point of being a non-scientist, which I think is an advantage.
It is, because once you get to understand it, then it's easy for you to tell other people how.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
that works. Teachers do the same thing. We have to learn
yes,
it first.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have some other stories, like you have just said, that are so important for people because it helps them understand, like the man with the burns or other things that have happened over the years that were intriguing to you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been joking in the book. I wanted to give people simple little intention experiments to try in their own lives.
Yes.
So I suggested that if they're women and their partners or husbands never bring them flowers, you know, they have to select something that never happens, and they should send an intention for their husbands or partners to bring them flowers. And I've had so many people write back and tell me great stories, or people who attend my seminars and workshops who I tell this to, and they all say to me things like, "No, my husband never brings me flowers." And I say, "Well, believe and send that intention." And I had one woman who did this. We were driving home. She was dropping me off at the airport, and she went home, and then she opened up the door, and there was her husband with a giant bouquet of roses. And so she wrote me and said, "You wouldn't believe it. I got home, and there were the roses." And I have another woman who was English and said, "I tried to do your intention idea when we were standing in line at a garden center because I was surrounded by all these beautiful flowers, and it reminded me that my husband never brings me flowers. So I sent an intention, and he was standing with me, and all of a sudden he flew off and came back with this giant geranium, flowering geranium plant. And he said, 'I just had to buy this for you. It was almost like I was getting instructions to do it.'" So
right,
from her mind
work
to his.
And also not to do it at Valentine's Day or Easter. Do it
yes
at some off time, or and an anniversary. Do it at some off time.
Some off time, absolutely, absolutely.
What a great idea for everyday kinds of things that you can do with intention. Can you think of any others?
Well, if you're a man, then let's just be good to men. If you're a man and your partner, female partner, hates football and you love it, send an intention for her to suddenly start enjoying sitting down and watching a game with you, or going to the match, or going to the game. Or if you've got children and they never make their beds, send an intention for them to do that and see what happens. You know, just those kinds of little fun things are just ways to remind yourself. That's all they are, just ways to remind yourself that intention really works.
Do you have these suggestions in your book on intention?
I do. I have a whole section on your own personal intention experiments. And I even suggest that you get together with your community, with like-minded people in your community, and send intentions for your community. You know, get together, meditate together, imagine yourself in one great big, as one great big mind, or as one great big psychic, you know, bubble sending an intention out, and then do all of the things with powering up together, and then send an intention to reduce crime rate by 10%. To increase the grade point average by 5%, anything like that, you know, just get together and do that sort of thing.
You know, Lynn McTaggart, I don't know if I ever said this to you. I'm an energy intuitive. I'm picking up you're a master. Did I ever tell you that?
No, that's nice.
You are, and you are here to do this now at this time. Isn't that amazing? Do you feel this is your soul's purpose?
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of, I stumbled into it from investigative reporting, but I found it, or it found me.
Absolutely. And you are making such a tremendous difference on the planet. We're so fortunate to have people like you here at this time. People who can think out of the box, people with vision. And so we just thank you for all of the work that you're doing here at this time on the planet, and especially blessings for this project that's happening, your big intention experiment, your biggest to date. Is this your biggest to date?
Well, each one is different, but each one is my biggest to date because we build on what we learned from before. And so we've done the seeds experiments. We've done sending intention to light emissions of a leaf. We've done sending intention to water, to see if we can change its cluster structure, simple ones to water. So now we're ready to take it into something that has a big implication in our lives. So each one is going to take this a step further or a step back. You know, they might not always work, and we have to be okay with that. And with each answer, we learn something, whatever it is, and we report the answer, whatever that is.
And it is getting bigger from the standpoint that is making more of a difference on the planet each time, from beans growing to purifying the water and cleaning the air and cleansing the hot spots of the planet to bring peace into those. And I'm thinking that from the little pieces that you have put in the book about how people could do it in their own lives, daily lives, it would make a great difference in bringing up our children. It would make a great difference in keeping marriages together.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I talk about in my seminars is the fact that there's evidence demonstrating that one argument with your partner can delay your wound healing by an entire day. They've shown that in studies. So imagine your toxic thoughts, what they do to your partner's health and relationship. So just, this is what the intention experiment is supposed to be. It's supposed to demonstrate to people on a giant scale that your thoughts affect the world. And also, it's supposed to help people who are so disempowered. We all feel so disempowered that one little puny person, one puny set of thoughts, can't do anything. And hopefully this is a demonstration that your thoughts matter and your thoughts are powerful enough. Just one person's thoughts are powerful enough to change the world.
You can start at home with your own family.
You can start at home with your own family. Mm-hmm. And then bring that into your lives, too. I want to mention one thing, which is a personal plug, an unashamed and unabashed personal plug. Which is, we're running Living with Intention seminars all around America in 2008. They're called Living with Intention, and we'll be in Chicago, Los Angeles, Portland, and Boston this year. So those kinds of seminars and intensives are the work I'm now doing, which is trying to work with people to show how to bring intention into your life and how to live with intention.
And
so they can find out that information on our website.
Are they one day? Are they weekend?
Weekend events from Friday to Sunday, Friday night to Sunday noontime.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have them in certain hotels, and the details are all on our websites.
And give us your website.
Okay, we have www.theintentionexperiment.com.
Say that again.
We also have www.livingthefield.com.
Okay, two of them.
Well, there's more. There's What Doctors Don't Tell You, too, which is www.wddty.com, which is for What Doctors Don't Tell You.com.
Okay. So you have a lot of information out there. All people have to do with this wonderful across the world is just punch in those letters, and they can find out all of the things that are happening with you. You are amazing. You're such an amazing person. I'm so pleased that we got to know you. And we want to thank you for all the work that you and your crew have put into this project that's happening on Saturday, March 29th. It's the next big intention experiment. And we'll be there with you and making a difference on the planet.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Carol. It's been really fun talking with you with these sessions.
Bless you, bless you.
And thank you, you too.
And let me say, on behalf of Energy Medicine Foundation, we also want to thank all of you who are listening and who registered questions. So this is your host, Carol Kepler, with blessings until we meet again.